The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 20th of October, 2020. On the podcast today, Kyle Frail, Executive Chairman of Open Orphan, discusses the contract they've signed with the UK government for the development of a COVID-19 human challenge study model. Also on the podcast, I talked to Harvey Sinclair, who's the CEO of E-Energy, E-A-A-S is the ticker there, and Harvey discusses the significance of them signing an exclusive OEM partnership with Venture Lighting Europe. And Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, covers this week's Bitcoin, blockchain and cryptocurrency news. And as always, at the end of the podcast, I'll be highlighting two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see lots of other content. Vela Technologies acquire interest in potential COVID-19 treatment for diabetics. There's one of the article there. There's also the SP Angel Morning View. Symphony Environmental Technologies completes $6 million financing for algae project. And Open Orphan, of course, strikes a £10 million deal with the UK government for COVID-19 study. And I talk about Kyle with that in the podcast. Also, check out there our COVID-19 index. Biggest riser there today is N4 Pharma, up 8% to 7.5 pence. Biggest faller today is Totally PLC, down 4.26% to 18 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Kyle Frail, Executive Chairman of Open Orphan, ORPH's ticker. Kyle, thanks for joining me.
Justin, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, good news. The news is out. I mean, it's been speculated about. It's been in the press. Speculation in the press. But it's out. You've got the government contract with the UK on this challenge study, which is very impressive. Some decent figures in there, and we'll get into that. As always, though, give us a one line, if you could, and or a sentence about Open Orphan for people not familiar with the company, Cahill.
Justin, yeah, look, Open Orphan is a rapidly growing, AIM-listed company that's heavily management-backed. And we're now, the beauty about it, in less than 1 year since its IPO, we're the world leader in the testing of vaccines and antivirals. So that is a very good place to be. We're really a vaccine testing company going forward. That's the space. The next 10 years, there's going to be an awful lot of money spent on vaccines, and we're right in the middle of that. So it's a good place to be.
Yeah, very hot here at the moment, isn't it? Like I said, you know, we there's never been a bigger race for a vaccine in history. And of course, people are quite, you know, there's a lot of worry about them. There's people, some people say, are they safe? Are they effective? So, of course, testing of the vaccines is a huge area. So tell us about this contract you've got with the government then, Kyle.
Yeah, look, as I said, for the last 20, 30 years, there was a huge amount of money spent in development, oncology, cancer products, gene therapy. There was virtually nothing spent on vaccines generally. Mm. With the pandemic, there's going to be an awful lot, as you said, the biggest race ever for COVID vaccines. But don't underestimate, there's a huge amount of money for the next 10 years already been spent on a range of other vaccines. So the vaccine development is speeding up hugely. They're catching up. So we're right in that space. We're providing, at the moment, 95% of our revenues have nothing to do with COVID vaccines. However, this morning, we were glad to announce, after several months of negotiation, the UK government has signed a contract with us for an initial 10-minute contract for what's called a characterization study. That's to get ready to test vaccines. They've also, that's for 10 million, it's already started, underway, and it'll be completed in the next 6 months. So big chunk of work. Mm-hmm. On top of that, They've signed, and you'll see it, they've got exclusive rights to the first three full-blown COVID-19 vaccine clinical trials as well. We've already guided the market. They're going to be 8 to 10 million each. And we've got three deposits, non-refundable, cash up front, of 2.5 million each. So in addition to our 10 million contract, we've got 7.5 million deposits for the first three studies. So that in turn, on top of the 10, is potentially another 30 million piece of work. So today's announcement is in theory in the region of 40 million. And that's pretty transformational for a little company like Open Orphan.
Yeah. And so where are you holding these studies? Because I know you're quite busy already. A 24-bed suite is pretty much booked up. So where are you holding these?
Yeah, look, at the moment, we're limited to our 24-bed capacity in East London. It's the first time in the history of it that we've been booked out for over 12 months, and we're going to be booked out for 18 months, literally in the coming month or two. So in one fell swoop, we've gone from 24 beds in East London. The government has provided, as part of this study, the 19-bed quarantine unit. The only other quarantine unit in the United Kingdom is a Royal Free Hospital in North London, and we've been provided that to run our COVID, this particular COVID trial. So we've now gone from having 24 beds, and we have an additional 19. So in theory, we could more or less double our revenue in the year ahead quite easy, but if we use both facilities to the maximum capacity.
Yeah, yeah. And can you just explain, you know, for people not familiar, what are challenge studies?
Yeah, look, challenge studies are a method of testing vaccines or any respiratory disease, and basically you challenge the body's immune system. The vaccine gets tested, you give it to them a month beforehand, and then you bring the volunteers into a clinic, whereby they're kept for 2 weeks under close medical supervision, and to see if the vaccine works, we infect them with, if it's influenza, if it's RSV, we influence them with RSV. So we've been doing that for 30 years successfully, and now as part of this, we'll infect them with a milder version of COVID-19. So it means within a month or two, we can guarantee to test any vaccine, prove it works or not, rather than waiting for these big 20, 30, 40,000 person field study. So it's not a safety study, it's part of the solution, but it will bring forward, it speeds up the testing of efficacy of vaccines. So hence, it's a great place to be because there's going to be a lot of money spent for the next 5 or 10 years on the testing of vaccines, and we're right there front and central, both the COVID story, but really importantly, the non-COVID story. At the moment, we're 95% non-COVID, but today's news, like, got a 40 million contract. That's a serious part of our revenue going forward. It's pure COVID as well.
Yeah, and I suppose you can tell how urgent this is because the government, you know, actually paying you to do this. Well, normally it's pharmaceutical companies, I assume, will be paying you for these challenge studies, but now the government want to test because, of course, is an urgency here, isn't there?
There is, look, and all governments around the world are looking at ways. So, yeah, in this case, the government's looking to have some way of fast-tracking the testing of vaccine. So this is the British government's initiative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, Kyle, you know, you're doing very well, and the share price has done very well, reflected that. But if people are listening, likes the sound of where you're positioned here, but are not yet following the story, just again, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add Open Orphan to their watch list, please.
Yeah, look, I say, Justin, we're very, very focused on delivering results because we're heavily management backed. We're still locked in for another 2 years, so there's no management team going to be selling shares. We've now built a company to a world leader in a great space. And they say we're both COVID central, but we're totally non-COVID. Say, there's a huge bit of our work is not due to COVID. So I think we've done a lot, we've promised a lot, but I think going forward, we've an awful lot more to do. And we think this is a company we could really do exciting things with in the months ahead. So hopefully, watch this space.
Excellent stuff. Kyle, good to chat to you as always. And like I say, hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Justin's pleasure. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Harvey Sinclair, CEO of E-Energy. EAAS is ticker there. Harvey, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Good to be here this morning.
Yeah, and you've announced yesterday an exclusive OEM partnership with Venture Lighting Europe, and we'll dig into that and the significance of that in a bit. Before we do, as always, you haven't been listed for long, so for people not familiar or never heard of you before, can you just explain what E-Energy is all about, Harvey?
Sure, yes. So E-Energy's core business is E-Light, which is an energy as a service business where we switch our customers, whether that's schools or private businesses, to energy efficient lighting for a fixed subscription fee. So they're able to unlock savings and net cash from day one without deploying any capital of their own. and they're able to reduce their carbon footprint at the same time. So it's a win-win for both Elite and the customer.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's dig into this latest agreement. You signed an exclusive partnership with Venture Lighting Europe. Just give us an overview of this, Harvey, then we'll discuss why it's significant.
Sure. So look, the background to this is, you know, we've, as you know, our chairman is the ex-chief executive of Philips Lighting. So we've got a heritage of, you know, very experienced supply chain relationships. And we've been working with Europe's leading LED manufacturers for the last 5 years, building very great relationships with, you know, great results. As we've moved and advanced our business model, we've started to recognize that there is a place in our business model, in particular in education, where there is less brand, if you like, brand recognition for a particular product from a particular manufacturer, to be able to create additional value by having a co-branded Elite solution, which means that we've been looking for a partner who can provide us with an exclusive product range for the education sector that meets the needs exactly for the commonplace environments that we see in schools. So most classrooms are of the same environment, most corridors look the same. So therefore we have specific technology requirements. And what this relationship does is provide us with a specific set of products exclusive to us at exclusive pricing, which is 25 to 30% below wholesale prices. But it also allows us to have a co-branded product so that the customer is seeing us as a much more vertically integrated solutions provider. And we think that's a really powerful message as we build the Elite brand out into the education community. And also, it also allows us to launch our Elite app in the new year with a vertically integrated supply chain model, so that when we're working with third parties like electrical contractors, they are not only getting the whole business in a box, i.e. they're able to attend opportunities, use the Elite app to deliver a survey and then prepare a automated proposal for the client live on site, but they're also able to get access to our technology lines using our supply chain with our branded technology.
Yeah, yeah. So essentially, what significance here is improved margins and what speed of installation and more efficient and just more integration. Is that right?
Yeah. In fact, there are three key benefits. The first is we're able to deliver product to site within a week, and that's fantastic as a result of the seasonality that we experience in the schools environment, where we're often asked to be on site in a very short window, whether that's over a half-term holiday or whether it's over a weekend or whether it's coming up for a Christmas holiday break. And we have a very short window to get on site and deliver. So to have a within-the-week delivery capability is phenomenal. So we're reducing our delivery time from 4 weeks down to 1 week for most core lines. And also, we like the opportunity to reduce our carbon footprint. So, you know, getting product from a UK manufacturer, I think says a lot to a customer. And I think as another soft benefit here is the fact that we've got a bit of a hedge on Brexit. So should the consequences of Brexit go against most businesses in terms of importing product from Europe, we will have a hedge on that because we will have product already on site in the UK.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's good news. And moving forward, this developing and part of your strategy is to acquire other businesses in the energy management sector. So, how is that coming along at the moment?
Oh, it's been fantastic. We've made some phenomenal relationships with our target, if you like, acquisition community. So we've shortlisted a number of businesses over the last 6 months. In fact, we were in discussions with over 10 very interested third parties that we thought were both strategically relevant, had the right mix of vendor appetite for taking paper, but also of the right size. Mm-hmm. And we've been very clear we're looking for a business that's doing more than $1 million in earnings so that we can bulk up quite quickly in terms of scale, give ourselves more economies of scale in supply chain and also credibility for large project wins. And, you know, we've shortlisted several out of that, you know, dozen or so down to, you know, advanced discussions. So, yeah, really exciting that we're making really good progress in the area.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like I say, you're looking in the energy sector, and part of that is your e-heat proposal, which is starting with. How's that progressing?
Yeah, so e-heat's been an interesting journey. We've been pursuing a range of technologies, and we've landed on heat pumps as the sort of the core technology to reduce our customers' hot water costs. And we presented our first project 2 weeks ago to Marlborough College, which is, as you know, a prestigious independent school. Mm-hmm. And the response was overwhelming. So we're hoping that we'll be able to announce our first project win in the coming weeks. As that client seeks to advance that project, but it's also given us a business model and a commercial model that allows us to replicate that to all our other schools. So wherever you've got a school with high hot water demands, which generally means have they got a swimming pool, have they got boarding houses, or are they a large school? Generally, the whole renewable heating contract solution works fantastically well. So yeah, hoping to start getting real momentum of that business model in the new year as we progress.
Yeah, absolutely. And the government sort of announced sort of public sector decarbonisation sort of scheme to provide grants to the public sector. How is that impacting the business?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting opportunity. As you know, the government made noises a couple of months ago around investing in public sector buildings with this whole concept of getting public sector more energy efficient. And they launched through Salex, which is a fantastic government, effectively sort of energy efficiency funding vehicle, this decarbonisation grant, which schools are eligible for. So whilst its focus is around all forms of energy efficiency, with a particular lean to electrification of heating, so playing very much to the e-heat opportunity, we also see it as a great opportunity for many of our schools' clients to work with Elight to apply for those grants and to boost the returns of their projects. So whilst we won't be providing the funding for those particular projects in the state school sector, what I think it will do is open up a much greater volume of school projects in the early part of next year, because there's a particular window of completing these projects by the end of March 2021. And the response from our school pipeline has been phenomenal, wanting our assistance in helping assess projects and working very well with Salex to support the initiative as the sort of the number one recognised energy efficiency provider for the education sector, puts us in a great position to capitalise on that free money that's coming from the government.
Yeah, absolutely. It all looks like it's heading in the right direction, Harvey. So for people who may be listening right now, like the sound of the progress, but are not yet following the story, just give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add e-energy to their watch list, please.
Sure. So look, energy efficiency is the number one solution for driving down energy consumption across commerce and public sector. Our business is leading the way in that initiative, and our business model is rapidly becoming the new normal in terms of how people can achieve energy savings. So, a great energy efficiency story, a great ESG story generally to watch.
Excellent stuff. Harvey, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman. He's the author of The Crypto Trader. He trades crypto. That's not all he trades, though. He'll trade anything. He'll trade his family in if it's the right price. Won't you, Glenn?
I have. I traded my granny, famously.
Yeah, cool. Excellent.
She's gone now.
Did you make a good profit on her?
I did.
100%. Yeah, 100% profit. Didn't cost me anything. There we are. So anyway, news-wise, first of all, let's check up on the price of Bitcoin. What's happening with Bitcoin?
Okay, let's have a quick price check on the price. It's been looking good for about the past... since the beginning of September. So more than a month and a half now, it's been just worming its way back upwards, which is frustrating because it had fallen previously. Mm-hmm. So for those people who were already in, of which I was not one, luckily, they're only just getting back to where they were in August. But for those of us who bought a bit lower down, it's happy days. It's just been sort of where are we up to now? 11,756 dollars. If you're going to look at it from a technical perspective, which, as you know, I like to do, overall, the trend has been sideways since the end of 2017. That's kind of the way you could look at it. Obviously, you had that huge bear market after 2017, in 2018 and 2019. But, you know, if you now look at the chart from a very long-term perspective, it just kind of looks like it's been moving sideways ever since the end of that bull market, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, hang on, where is it?
Have a look.
I'm trying to look here, what are you looking at? What time frame?
I'm looking at a daily time frame, so looking all the way back to 2017 on the chart. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's risen so far now from its lowest point that it now just kind of looks like, okay, we've had a reasonably short bear market, short by stock market standards anyway.
It's going to pop. I think it's going
to
pop.
It does look that way, doesn't it? You know, that's what I'm sort of trying to stop myself from saying. It's going up. But the chart does point in an upward direction. It does seem to indicate that would be the next big move, yeah.
If you look at the relative strength index on the Bitcoin, whenever it's got above sort of 65, it normally goes well. And it's at 67 at the moment there. It's just the start of a nice run several times. Like, if I look back, the last time it's been coming from this direction, it went in 26th of July 2020. It popped up over 65. Then it went from 9.5 up. Then for the next few weeks, it went up to 11,000, come back down. And if you go back even further than that, back in 20th of April, wow, that's nuts now, isn't it, to think we're so far along the year. But that was lockdown territory. But it went from, you know, 65 then the RSI, and that one day there, a massive gain at 13% in one day, and then it went from 7,600 and basically went up to pretty much 10,000. So if it pops above that, the strength is good. It should pop here sooner or later. It may pop.
It does look good. The only thing that puts me off is all the people who are still on Twitter, the Bitcoin obsessives, the true zealots of Bitcoin, who are just still saying, it's going to the moon, it's going up. And, you know, whenever those kind of people are saying that kind of thing, I always tend to think, well, the market's going to do the opposite of whatever the idiots are saying. But the truth is that those idiots say it all the time, regardless of whether the market's about to go up or about to go down. So I guess it has to go up sometime. Plus, actually, you could make a comparison with the gold zealots, the people who are like, gold, the price of gold is going to go through the roof. You know, people like Peter Schiff, who you've probably seen on Twitter, the people who always say the price of gold is going to go through the roof. They always say it, but of course, this past year, it has actually happened. So I guess, you know, even a stop clock is right twice a day type phenomenon.
Yeah, cool. Okay, anything happening in the news in the Bitcoin world, cryptocurrency world?
Yeah, there's some interesting things that I wanted to mention. Well, Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, was speaking yesterday about cryptocurrencies, and in particular central bank digital currencies. He admitted that the advent of Libra, Facebook's proposed cryptocurrency, had kind of shaken everybody up. It had made all the central bankers go, oh dear, we better do something about this. And they'd all really, you know, got off their asses at that point and started to think about their own central bank digital currencies in a much more serious way. Now, China, as we know, is now very, very far down the line with it. They're that close to launching their own central bank digital currency, fully fledged. It's got its own apps for your phone and everything, and they've tested it out on large numbers of people in various cities. So they're really close now. Whereas the Federal Reserve are still, I mean, Jerome Powell said, we're still at the stage of discussing the various different options for how it would work technically. You know, they haven't really started properly designing the thing. They're still in the kind of pondering phase, which is kind of disappointing considering how close China is. And China has everything to gain and America has everything to lose, because of course they're the global reserve currency. And if they let China get too far ahead with this, there is a danger, particularly with the weight that China has in trade in the developing countries, there's a danger that China will steal a march here and start to you know, if not become the new global reserve currency, at least bite big chunks out of the US's status as the big currency, as the dollar. So, yeah, it's worrying times, I would say. The EU are still, they're further down the line with the digital currency, and various other countries are forging ahead as well. But nobody is anywhere near as far ahead as China at the moment. So that's a little bit worrying.
Anyway, but it's, you know what? What's complicated, right? It's too many now vehicles, too many cryptocurrencies. That's what's muddying the waters, you know? And, like, the main one, Bitcoin, isn't really, you can't use it. It's not practical. It's the platform, is it? It's a bit unwieldy, you know? But it uses too much electricity and all that stuff, too much energy. So it needs to be one now. They're all the people need to get together and say, let's get behind one, not Bitcoin, because it's not going to work. I don't know. If it's a store of value, then maybe. But I don't know. It seems like it's fraught with scammers, you know, the cryptocurrency world. That's the trouble. It needs to be cleaned up. It needs to be regulated in some way. Not, and I don't think that's a bad thing, really, do you? But because there's too much scams
around.
It
would be nice if it had...
The problem is not with Bitcoin itself.
As you say, the problem is with the scammers who surround the area, as you get, of course, with all, you know, all new technologies and you know, like as we talked about last week when the internet was first invented, you know, all the criminals and the pornographers rushed onto the internet, and we all had to remember all those Windows and viruses we constantly had to close down on Windows. You remember those little pop-up windows with pictures of women gyrating and that kind of thing? You'd get all that kind of stuff the whole time, and it took some years for the virus checkers and everything to get rid of that kind of thing. Well, they didn't get rid of it completely, obviously, but at least it was put back in its box. Whereas the problem here is, as you say, because there are no kind of official, these are the proper Bitcoin exchanges, these are the ones you can trust, there's no kind of official pronouncement from regulatory authorities that these are the guys you can trust and everybody else should be ignored. Because there isn't that, loads of people who write to me after reading my book, you know, loads of them fall for dodgy companies who say that they're Bitcoin traders and Bitcoin exchanges, and, you know, and they're not. They're scammers, but it's very, very difficult for people to know which one's which. I'm going to update my website, actually, and get some of the latest, because I have a page on my website where I recommend, or not recommend, but I talk about the more responsible exchanges, the ones that are trusted by the vast majority of crypto traders. I have some of that in my book as well, but I updated it on my website too, just glenngoodman.com. And I think I'm going to update it again in light of some new information. But, you know, other than me, who's really making that effort out there to tell you who's safe and who's not safe?
Yeah, nobody. The thing is, that by the nature, the people who are bullish on crypto are anti-regulation, aren't they?
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's holding it back a little bit, regulation. And it needs a bit of regulation, and it's a part of it. I remember when the Bitcoin had a big rally back, when was it? When was the last big, when it hit 20,000 or 90,000? July 2019. No, before that, sorry. 2018. I was on a couple of email lists for ICOs. And they literally, I bet 5 ICOs a day. It's ridiculous. Everyone was launching a cryptocurrency. And I thought, this is nuts. It's the Wild West. And
it was. It really was.
Yeah, okay, cool.
But yeah, it's you're right. It's early days, and it's hard for people to navigate their way around it, which is why I wrote that sodding book. In the first place, you know, I don't think anybody should invest in or try and invest in cryptocurrencies without reading my book. That's what I think.
Exactly.
I think
well, in fact, that's the regulation that needs to come in, Glenn.
Yes.
That's it.
Before it should be reading, like the Bible.
You know, when you sometimes go on a site and you have to tick a terms and conditions box. Have you read all the terms? Well, one of them should be, have you read, you know, before you get a platform that deals in Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies, have you read Glenn Goodman's book, The Crypto Trader? You have to tick the box, and they give you a question. Okay, on paragraph thing or chapter thing, what does he talk about? And then they've ticked another box and answer it, and then you get in there, access it. Rather than seeing those little pictures you see, how many motorbikes can you see in this picture? That kind of thing, those kind of scam things. They ask you a question about your book, and that's the way. Put that to the government, Glenn, if I were you.
I think that's a very good idea. I will. I'll tell them. And they should respect me, because just this morning, for example, I received an email directly from President Donald Trump. I'll have you know. It's just arrived in my inbox. It says, official message from President Trump. Friend, he says. So, I'm his friend. Friend, I have something very important to tell you. When I get up on that debate stage for the final time on Thursday, I want you to know that I will be fighting for the American people every single second. You are my motivation to keep going, which is why I wanted to invite you to join a group that is very special to me, the President's Club. So, it's an invite to join the President's Club, and all I have to do is contribute any amount today.
Wow,
to join
amazing.
That club. Any
that's,
amount.
That's amazing. That's amazing you've been invited to join that. I haven't been invited. And yeah. So how much
you And all I have to do is pay money.
If I were you,
I'm automatically a member.
If I were you, I'd put a lot of money in there, Glenn. Put a lot of money in there, because I think, you know, depending on how much you put in, depending where you sit in the President's Club. And well, you want to sit next to the President in the President's Club, so chuck a couple of million in there, you'd be right next to you. You'd be on his lap.
That's right, with him breathing his COVID all over me. And, of course, I wouldn't be allowed to wear a mask, I imagine.
Well, no, he's gone through clinical trials. So, what do you think is going to happen to Bitcoin? Right now, we're at pretty much max fear. Since the first lockdown, we're at max fear. Everyone's saying, oh, this is going to lock down. This is probably the best time now to invest in certain stocks. And I continue to say, you know, leisure stocks and all that, and the ones that have been bombed out, good businesses in that area. Now is the time to take maybe a small positions in those companies, because we know straight after the fear is lifted, it starts a rally. And, you know, and when you're at max fear, like going back, so many people missed out, so did I, on those, that big, in fact, the only thing I did top up on, when there was big sell-offs happening, I was topping up on my fund, which is a basically an equity fund, 100% equity, it's Vanguard. I was topping up all the way down that. And even that's quite safe, I thought. But even I started getting worried after sort of day five when it just kept going down. I thought, what's going on here? There seems to be no bottom in the market in that dash for cash. That's the only thing I sort of topped up on in that down day. But now I'm in profit, nicely in profit in that. But looking back in it, I missed the opportunity on so many stocks, because so many stocks were that big dip into March that you could, if you bought any stock in that sell off and scaled in for like 10 days, you'd probably be laughing by now, you know. So, but as you know, fear is the time to buy. When the sentiment is down, that's the time to buy. You know, you won't get bargains like this when everyone's happy and when everyone's bullish, because you know it'll be priced in and everything's rallies, you know. So now's the time, I think.
That is a good way of looking at it, certainly. I always go along with that way of looking at things, but also, you know, technically speaking. I guess Bitcoin at the moment could be classified as somewhere between a tech stock and
gold. Oh, yeah, sorry, that was my question.
Sorry,
I didn't finish my question. So I was going to say,
all right.
Is it rallying a little bit? Is it edging towards its upper level because fear is in the market? Is that why? And if that's the case, when fear is lifted a little bit, if some of these lockdowns do have, you know, a decent impact on the R, the infection rate comes down, will then people say, okay, you know, we're okay for Christmas, our vaccines are on the corner, you know, it's a home run now, we're back in, you know, because we are. I don't understand what the fear is all about, essentially, because we know by now, right, we're testing now 10 times as many people as before. Deaths are a tenth of what they were. We have now medication, you know, in like remdesivir and that other one that Trump took, therapeutics that'll help people. And so we know the vulnerable sectors. We didn't know a lot about it beforehand. We now know who it affects the most, so we can sort of shield these people. So I don't understand why the fear is so much. I just think, you know, governments are going over. I don't think that the NHS will be overwhelmed, will they? Because, you know, we can put in place barriers. You know, if you're vulnerable, stay away from people, wash your hands. You know?
Circuit breakers, if necessary,
it's
as they keep talking
about.
I think they just
listen to all the scientist models have been way off. Do you remember that guy who got sealed, that Neil Ferguson guy? He was saying we'll have like 250,000 infections a day or something ridiculous.
He makes me
annoyed. And he had an affair with he started seeing his girlfriend on the road when he wasn't supposed to in lockdown. And so he was a liar. The government will go down because of Dominic Cummings, I believe, and I think we should hold them to account on that. When it comes to next voting day, I will not be voting for Conservatives based on that. Protecting him, who's
it
a liar.
Disgusting.
Yeah,
it
when
was.
If a guy, you know, central to the business, the policy of lockdown, can't abide by the rules and then lies about it, and they back him up and don't sack him. There's no way you can trust the government anymore. I can't anyway. That's a personal opinion. But I mean,
no, I agree. I mean, what kind of government you have to ask yourself is what kind of government is it if they consider Dominic Cummings so important, so absolutely crucial to the running of the government that they can't get rid of him when he's done something like that, which they knew they needed to do in order to keep public confidence. But he was even more important than keeping public confidence. And so that question, the question I then ask myself is what's wrong with the rest of them if he's so damn important? He's not that bloody clever. Okay, he's made a hell of a lot of mistakes other than his personal mistake. He's made a hell of a lot of policy mistakes as well. He's not God. So why on earth are they keeping him on? That's what I find odd. It's like he's even more central than Alistair Campbell was back in the Blair days. Alistair Campbell's another one who winds me up because he's constantly on TV doing documentaries and things as if he's a respectable member of society. The liar. I mean, it shocks me. Shocks me the lies that were told. Anyway, that's a different topic.
What I was going to say is, do you think Bitcoin will, you know, fall back if, you know, like this fear lifts a bit? Because, of course, Bitcoin is seen as an alternative investment, so it sort of, you know, revels in fear. Yeah. You know, it does well. It's bullish on fear. So do you think it'll come back if, you know, when the infections go down and this fear subsides, which will subside, of course, what do you think will happen to Bitcoin? Will it be a negative thing for it?
Well, the tricky thing is that as I was about to say, Bitcoin is a sort of a cross between a tech stock and gold in the way that it's treated by traders. So when tech stocks are rising, Bitcoin tends to rise with it. This is what's been going on for at least the last 6 months. But also when gold rises, there seems to be a correlation between gold and Bitcoin as well. So considering that what you're implying is that the two things should really be opposites, gold and tech stocks. Like when people are scared, they invest in gold. But when people are bullish, they invest in tech stocks. Bitcoin is a sort of a cross between the two, which makes it difficult to predict its movement in terms of people's greed or fear type instincts. My feeling, you know, I'll go out on a limb and say I think that Bitcoin is likely to benefit from both phenomena, that it will benefit from the fear of inflation and the fear of governments printing endless money, but it will also benefit when people are feeling bullish about tech stocks, as it has been doing. I think it will continue to benefit from that effect too. I think a stock market crash would probably crash Bitcoin as well. That's what I reckon. So if we, you know, if tech stocks are overblown, which they are, if they suddenly have a massive, massive correction, I'd be surprised if that didn't bring Bitcoin down with it.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's something to worry about.
There's no safe haven then.
No safe haven, mate. No safe haven for you. I just want to mention one more because I see we're getting time is getting on. I want to mention one more story, which is which caught my eye this week. Alexander Lebedev, the guy who the Russian millionaire or billionaire, I think, who owns the Independent and the Evening Standard, he has suddenly decided that cryptocurrency has the power, as he put it in his headline, to revolutionize the corrupt banking system. He says more countries are adopting blockchain technologies and smart contracts in order to make dirty money a thing of the past. And he starts off by explaining, as his credentials, that he's been a banker for most of his career. He bought a bank, the National Reserve Bank of Moscow, in 1995, and then sold it when it was far, far larger. He basically grew it up into he says, for a quarter of a century, I was the CEO of the third largest private bank in Russia in equity capital terms. So, you know, he's a massive banker. He knows about all the corruption that the industry is riddled with. And he says modern bankers ruin their banks by pocketing clients' money. Calls them banksters, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, point is, he's saying that blockchain, because of its trustless nature, has the ability to circumvent all these trust issues. I mean, that's one of the best things about Bitcoin, the fact that it has no central agency, it has no counterparty. You're basically just Yeah, the system runs itself. The system allows you to trust it. You know, all the scams that you hear about concerning Bitcoin are all outside of the actual Bitcoin system itself. In other words, when you make a transaction within the Bitcoin system, you can trust that transaction to a very large extent because that's the way the algorithms are designed to make it work that way, so that nobody has an incentive and nobody is able to destroy the system or to make fake transactions. So the transactions can be trusted. And he looks at that technology and says, this is the solution to the problem we have with the banking industry just stealing everybody's money year after year, decade after decade. They can be cut out of the entire equation. We can have a beautiful kind of peer-to-peer banking system. So anyway, he's setting up with some partners what he calls the Independent Decentralized Financial Ecosystem, or Bank 2.0, representing a new generation of banking in which all participants are simultaneously beneficiaries, and it would offer normal banking services but be more trustworthy. That's the idea.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, but it's funny how he says that now. He's revealing the banking system was corrupt. Now he's left it, and now he's saying, and he didn't mention it when he was in the banking system, and now he's in the currency system. He's not mentioned any crypto. So I don't know if I trust him really. Like I say, he was a big banker.
It's a bit like Jordan Belfort or someone, or Nick Leeson, isn't it? It's like they did their bad things, and now they're like, who knows better about bad things than me?
Exactly. You didn't admit it while you were doing it, but now all of a sudden you're honest, and clean as a day's long. Marvellous stuff, Glenn. Thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak to you next week.
Okay,
it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Open Orphan, down 2.4%. Of course, I checked the Cahill on the podcast. At four, Alien Metals, down 15% to 2.45 pence. At three, Boohoo.com, down 1.8%, 249. At two, Bazant Resources, went berserk yesterday, Bazant. Now that's down 8.5% to 0.445. And at one, Ferro Alloy Resources Limited, and that's up 1% to 11 pence. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five is Symphony Environmental, completion of Aeronova project financing. At four, Predator Oil and Gas, operational update CO2 EOR Trinidad. At three, Jangada Mines, Valor announcement. At two, Tiziana Life Sciences, issue of equity on exercise of warrants. And at one, Open Orphan, contract signed with UK government. And of course, that's what I talked about with Cahill on the podcast. That's it for the podcast today. Thanks very much for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.